You're listening to a special showcase episode of the Round Table Podcast, 20 Minutes with Nobilis Reed. This episode is not workplace appropriate, nor is it child appropriate. Mature content and themes will be discussed. Literary Alchemists. I'm Dave Robertson.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to a special showcase episode of the Roundtable Podcast, 20 Minutes With.
20 Minutes With is a segment in which Dave and I have the fabulous honor to share the microphone with some really interesting people. And today is a little bit different than what we normally do. So, Dave...
It's delightfully different. It's seductively, alluringly different. And friends, as you heard in the little blurb before the episode ran, this is definitely not going to be a workplace safe or kid safe episode.
No.
As you know, we don't bleep or edit for language, and I can pretty much guarantee there's going to be some adult content and material going on in this episode. Our guest host for this episode of 20 Minutes With has literally carved an epic swath of real estate in the literary genre. He's written novels, novellas, short stories in print, ebook, and audio formats, including, he might have to correct me on the pronunciation of this, Ex Fumo Gaudium, which translates to From Steam Comes Joy, an erotic romance steampunk novella set, get this, in a steam-powered version of ancient Rome, which sounds fucking awesome. His first novel, Scouts, was nominated for the Epic Authors Award. He edited Coming Together in Flux, an anthology with the proceeds going to charity. His audio presence is vast and glorious. The weekly Nobilis Erotica podcast, which, by the way, has apps you can plug into your iPhone or iPod to get it on demand. The monthly Good Parts podcast, which is about writing, editing, submitting? Yeah, there we go.
Submitting.
Yeah, baby. And promoting erotic fiction. The Pieces audiobook, which is a cooperative novella created and compiled by our guest and written by 7 authors. And he also recorded and produced A Foolish World audiobook, 2 novellas by Anne Regentin.
Regentin.
Regentin. See,
Regentin.
Regentin. Even better. That sounds much better than the way I was saying it. And you can check out his website, nobiliserotica.com, which is brimming forth with fiction in all media formats. Brian, please help me in welcoming to the Skype line, Nobilis Reed. Nobilis, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast, man.
You are quite welcome. I am so happy to be here.
Ah, excellent. Now, you are an author, first and foremost. I refuse to put labels on genre or type, but honestly, you have been distinguished and are widely known as an erotic fiction author.
That is correct.
Okay. I must confess that as worldly and erudite as I'd like to think I am, there's a fourth grader sitting inside me going, ooh, boobies, ooh, you know, and
let me clarify something.
Would you be so kind?
Let me tell you what I believe about the word erotica. Primarily, it's a marketing term. It means that when you go find a book that's labeled erotica, it's going to have sex in it, and it's going to have explicit sex in it. Now, the thing is, that there's a lot of books out there that aren't labeled erotica that you can find explicit sex in.
Sure.
But what it means is that you are definitely going to.
there's no rolling the dice on it. It's going to happen.
Right. It's going to happen. Now, the thing is that you don't call a book that's definitely going to contain violence a Marshall book.
True.
Okay? You know, yep. Eros, Mars, what have you. Yeah. You're not going to find... Because the thing is, that's like 3/4 of them.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Horror, action, science fiction, fantasy, all of them, they're all going to have violence. And some of it more explicit than others, but it's all going to have it.
So why do you feel that the culture is compelled to have to label sexuality with erotic when they clearly don't for the other qualities
because,
of a book?
Because we Americans are much more willing to portray the end of a life than the beginning.
Oh. there's the sound bite right there, ladies and gentlemen.
And it's we're kind of fucked up bleak about it, but the thing is that, you know, I'm an author in the market that exists. So sure. I take the word erotica because, well, for one thing, I don't want somebody to pick up one of my books and be surprised.
Yeah, really.
Oh my.
Oh dear.
They're doing it and the words are right there on the page.
Genitalia. Oh my god.
So, you know, because I don't really want to shock people. I mean, that's kind of a different kind of writing than what I do. I'm not out to shock people.
Well, and I've read your work, and to be perfectly honest, your work is, you know, these aren't sex stories. These are richly crafted characters in well-crafted and well-shaped story arcs. And yes, there is explicit sex in there, and that's an expectation, I guess, and that's what's laid down with the label. But this is legitimate literature here that's going out, and there's a long history of that.
You know, well, let me add something else to that. It is as difficult to write a good sex scene as it is to write a good chase scene or to write.
Now let's talk about that.
Yeah,
let's talk about that. What are the challenges of writing a good sex scene?
Well, first of all, sex is something that involves all of the senses directly and fully. Okay? So if all you're writing down is what people are doing and you're not including how it feels and how it looks and how it smells and what it sounds are happening, all those kinds of things, you're missing out on 90% of what a good sex scene is.
Wow. Okay?
Also, people have feelings about what's going on. It's a primal experience. And so if you're writing from a viewpoint that's close to the character, either a very close third person or a first person, how they're feeling about what's going on has to be in there too. So there's this huge bandwidth that you have to squeeze into that text.
Now, how would you recommend, I mean, how do you approach that process? And what would you recommend to writers out there who, like you, have had these stories kicking around in their heads and you decided to pursue a career in it? How would you advise a writer to pursue a sex scene if they wanted to go that way?
Well, the first thing I would say is to know what you're talking about.
Have sex, in other words?
Having sex is a good start. It is not 100% required.
No, true.
Understanding the anatomy is very important, and it's amazing how few people actually do understand that anatomy and how it works, even though they have at least half of it. how bodies bend, how they move, how muscles work, and pay attention to that. I mean, it can be really damn useful to take yoga.
Really?
Because so much of it involves being present in your body and feeling what your body is doing. And really just shutting everything out and just paying attention to what your body is doing and what it feels like to breathe and what it feels like to have a heartbeat, what it feels like to move and what it feels like to balance and all these other things that bodies do. Because all that stuff is part of yoga. I studied 2 years of yoga in college. It was a half credit course, but I took credit yoga in college. I've studied on and off more just as a kind of a meditation and exercise than to actually kind of excel at it. You're there. The instructor is presenting all the stuff that you're doing and the poses and such. But it gave me a certain amount of connection to my body that I think people who are in other physical disciplines like sports don't necessarily have, because if you're playing a sport, you're focused not only on yourself, but on what all these other people are doing, where the ball is, all these other things.
Sure.
Right. And it's 90% external, whereas yoga is 90% internal.
Yeah.
There are other disciplines that are like that, but that's the one that's most accessible for most people.
Excellent.
The number one thing I would say is to really be in touch with your own body. And since you've only got your own body, if there's other people you want to include in your erotica, which isn't necessarily 100% of the time, you also want to pay attention to how other people report their bodies working in truth, because there's a huge amount of really crappy erotica out there that has people, for example, having sex, having simultaneous orgasms with absolutely no effort on their own part. It just happens every time.
Miraculously.
People having orgasms from the most minimal of stimulation and or explanation. It's like, oh, wow, that was quick. Okay.
well, and that's just like on TV or in the movies, it seems like just to keep the airtime down, they speed it up. And you kind of wonder if everybody, you know, it doesn't take them much, and maybe the martial equivalent. You know?
I like to make analogies to violence, because everybody's seen violence on TV.
Sure.
It's like when, you know, the bad guy walks into the tavern and the good guy pulls out a gun and shoots him, and the guy flies 16 feet back. The gun nut is going to go, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. The guy is more likely to fall forward because he was walking forward when he got shot. And people who understand sex, when they read stuff that reads like that, go, that's not how that happens.
Which is actually more people will understand about sex than will understand about guns.
Exactly. It's very important to understand how all that stuff works and be mindful of that when you're writing.
Yeah.
Now, the way that I do that, the way that I get all the description in there and all that kind of stuff, is that my first draft is really, because your first draft is always crap. And so I make sure that my first draft is crap in order to maintain this tradition, but not including any details about what people look like, what things feel or smell or taste like. All that sensory input isn't there. All it is just descriptions of what happens.
Okay.
And if there's certain things that are important to the plot, like a certain person feels a certain way or something like that, I'll just put a note in, you know, Chalers is mad. and
expand later.
And expand later. And so I start off with only the stuff that relates to the plot and the aspects of character and setting that are important to that. Right. And then once I'm done, I can go through, pull out the little details that are important to make sure that they're mentioned before they're important, and go back through and add and then put the flesh on the bones in the second run through.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that gets much easier to focus on that rich sensory experience when you're not worried about what's going to happen next.
Sure.
Right.
We'll be back with more of our conversation with Nobilis Reed after this promotional break.
Hey, Mick.
Hmm?
What should I put in my intro?
I don't care. Just so long as you don't do the story so far.
Yes, I know, but how will my listeners be reminded of what happened so far?
Get the episodes out quickly?
Yeah, that's the right one talking.
Have you fixed your timeline? You know he doesn't like when a story jumps back and forth in time.
No, I'm still rewriting the whole thing so that it's not in first-person narrative anymore.
And what about your cast?
Oh, shut up.
View from Valhalla. The website for podcast novel reviews. At www.viewfromvalhalla.com.
Now, let's get back to the conversation with Nobilis Reed.
Now, how does a writer, because what I've seen, I haven't seen a lot of it, and I'll be honest, but of the ones that I have looked through, it seems like they're treated really respectfully. And so how does a writer keep erotica in the realm of a respectable story without it all just suddenly turning into, and I've been struggling with trying to find a good euphemism for this, but honestly, just a fuck fest.
Well, see, the thing is,
let me ask, because Brian, what do you mean by respectable?
Well, what I'm coming from is, as a new writer, I can see people saying, ooh, maybe I should try out erotica. And they may approach it the same way that they approach some other things, where it's just, you know, their skewed vision of what, why people pick up erotica in the first place. And so mm-hmm. in terms of respectable, I mean, right. something that if I read a scene, it may be steamy, it may be sexy, but I'm going to walk away from it feeling, at least in some way, almost enriched, as opposed to reading something and feeling like I have to look over my shoulder to see if my mom's in the room.
Well said. I mean? Okay. I
ideally,
understand now.
Ideally, I want you to feel both.
Right.
Ideally, I want both. And let me tell you why. I do want you to feel like there's something profound going on. And for that reason, I try to always make my stories about something. Right. Scouts is a coming-of-age story. It's about this kid, Challers, and his girlfriend, Valka, who've got a very idealized puppy-love relationship that have it smashed to pieces because it's this, you know, it's made out of glass. It's beautiful, but it's incredibly fragile. And the slightest stress is put on it, and it just completely shatters. And then, as the book progresses, they have the opportunity to remake their relationship in a more mature fashion. That's kind of cognizant of the environment in which they find themselves. So the fact that that storyline runs through Scouts means that all the sex scenes where that stuff often happens mm-hmm. have meaning. They have right. an impact on the storyline.
It's a part of their relationship development.
It's part of their relationship development, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the erotica is not the story. It's an egg that requires a nest, or it's a heart that requires a body.
Yes.
Basically, yes. Right? You have to have a good, solid story. You can't just jump into sex and then expect people to...
Well, see, the thing is that there's plenty of stuff out there. I mean,
yeah.
you pick
penthouse
up
the average... Penthouse Forum, for all intents
right.
and purposes.
Penthouse right.
Forum. Exactly. But, I mean, you pick up, you know, well-regarded erotica anthologies, like from Claeus Press or something like that, and most of the stories that you find are a sex scene.
Right.
You know, and to me, they count more as vignettes because they don't really have a whole lot of plot, character growth, any of kind of an arc or anything to them. But in a short sex scene, sorry, in a short story, there isn't a lot of room for that. So sometimes sure. you just have to kind of imply that it's there.
Right.
It is a challenge to get a lot of that kind of matrix, you know, all that support.
Sure.
Does
erotic fiction incorporate nemesis at all or antagonists?
Oh yeah. Oh hell yeah.
How does that work?
Well, in Scouts, well, see the thing is that in most standard science fiction, fantasy, etc., most of the genre fiction that you and I are used to, the antagonist actually has it in for the protagonist.
Right.
They want to do him dirt for whatever reason, or they'd want to protect themselves from him. Whatever it is, there's an oppositional relationship there.
A control game.
Not necessarily control. What's going on there more often than not, and then sometimes it isn't, but more often than not, it's a very direct confrontation.
Okay.
The antagonist in the beginning part, at least, of Scouts is the mentor that Challers has been paired with, who is trying to mold him. The main character joins up this interstellar messenger service called the Scouts, whose ships run on sex. That's why the sex is a part of it. And she's trying to mold him to be a good scout.
Okay.
And along the way, he learns that perhaps being a scout isn't a good thing to be. And so she's the antagonist because she's trying to do something to him that he's not really sure he wants done to him, but they're partners and they have sex together. Okay.
That's a complex relationship.
Yes. Right? And the evolution of that relationship actually is more central to Scouts than the one between Challers and Valka. Challers and Valka's relationship evolves over the entire trilogy. The point I was getting to was that an antagonist in an erotic story doesn't necessarily have to be an enemy.
Okay.
Okay. They're just they're the person who represents an obstacle.
Right. Okay.
And it doesn't have to be in that classic sense of "I want to be king." No, I will stop you.
Yeah, I mean, erotica stories tend to be much more personal.
Sure.
I mean, I can think of examples. I mean, I recently recorded a story for Cecilia Tan, actually, to put up on Audible, called "The Velderette." And there's a sex scene in every single chapter of that story, but every single one of them is integral to the plot. Every single one of them advances something very central to the story. Exactly who the antagonists are and what the obstacles are changes along the way.
See, I would think erotica would be a very challenging format to write in for exactly that reason.
I mean, what I was going to get to with the Velderette, I lost track of it. Now I've got it again. The Velderette is interesting because the fate of the entire planet is at stake, and it's about the relationships of four people.
Wow. So you've got that playing in the background, and you've got the primary crux of the story being relationships between a quartet.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
That's wow. See, yeah, now I want to read that story just to see how that plays out, because that's that, right. I can't imagine something that grand and epic being, I don't know, reduced, but focused into four individuals and their interpersonal relations.
Because it's erotica, some of the focus is different than you and I would expect in this.
How so?
Well, because so much of it, what happens during sex, and we're not used to that. We're not used to living our lives in such a way that everything happens during sex. For most of us, sex is very primal and you know, very emotional event, and they can occasionally be life-changing events, but they're not usually. I mean, most of us have some kind of routine associated with it, you know?
Sure, right.
Again, to make the analogy, for most people, shooting a gun is a routine event. They go down to the range, they pull out the gun, they shoot, they put it away. It's a routine. There's nothing special about it whatsoever. 99% of the time, when ammunition is fired, it's shot at a target.
Right.
But you don't find people writing novels about guys who just go down to the range.
I mean, right.
They do go down to the range, but that's not part of the story. You know,
and we won't go into the Freudian overtones of a gun at this point.
Well, so my point is that, you know, the sex that you find in erotic novels bears the same relationship to everyday sex that the gunplay you find in martial novels does to target shooting. That's not to diminish everyday sex. Everyday sex is wonderful. I love it. And in fact, I don't want to have life-changing events every time I have sex. Really, really stressful. The same way I don't want to walk out of my house and have gunplay.
God, there it is. That's the quote that we're going to promote this podcast with right there.
That's right.
So, right alongside learn to love the whip. Okay.
Learn to love the whip, exactly.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, because it seems to me almost like erotica is getting closer to literary fiction with a genre background. Does that make sense?
No, because literary fiction is damn boring.
Oh yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. But where I'm coming at it is in the sense that there's so much concentration on the characters and the interplay between the characters, and it seems like these erotic scenes that we're talking about, we have to be intimate with the characters almost on the same level that literary fiction is, but then we bypass the boring aspect.
See, the thing is, I don't think that genre fiction is necessarily bypassing that either.
Okay.
And it can be. I mean, you can have things that are these huge epics with, you know, dozens of characters, none of whom get a huge spotlight put on them.
Right.
You can have those. I mean, you know, Game of Thrones, for example, is, you know, nobody gets the entire novel's attention, you know, 10% at most. But there's also the Cushiel's Avatar series by Jacqueline Carey, which is about basically about one character. And it's this huge epic, and it's all her. It's all Phaedra. And at the end of the first book, you know, she's fallen in love with Jocelyn and had sex with him, and there's all kinds of, you know, great, wonderful stuff there. But she's also saved her kingdom. So there's this huge, grand, epic scope, and it's also very personal at the same time. And the reason I mentioned it is because Jacqueline Carey is one of my heroines. I've read that whole series and loved them, and loved how she embeds this erotic. It's not erotica per se, because it's not quite as explicit as it could be. It's basically on the edge of what you can get away with in regular fiction. And there's not a huge number of sex scenes either. There's like five or six. But nevertheless, it embeds this erotic relationship inside this epic fantasy scope in a way that I aspire to. Don't really feel like I've completely accomplished yet.
Well, you have many tales to write yet to come.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, and with that, gentlemen, I'm sorry to say that the clock has ticked down, and Nobilis, as always, it ends too quickly. There are far too many questions yet to be asked and explored, because this has been utterly fascinating for a neophyte format like myself, and hopefully for our audience as well. Thank you so much for taking time and walking us through our paces on this. That was intriguing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, any last comments or observations?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right that this has really opened up a whole new can of worms for me. So I'm fascinated, and this has been fabulous. So I'm sure that we will be talking to you again very soon.
In fact, if things work out well, we might have Nobilis on as a guest writer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That would be fabulous.
Yeah. We will pursue that in the future, definitely. But for now, that's going to wrap up this episode of 20 Minutes With. Friends, thank you so much for tuning in. We deeply appreciate it. Check back in a few days, where we'll have Nobilis back, and we'll have Nobilis workshop a very intriguing near future sci-fi erotic romance offered by a widely known podcasting phenomenon who shall remain nameless for now. Oh, that was subtle, wasn't it?
ow, oh my god, I think you bruised me with that one.
Oh, the Mack truck, holy crap, it's rolling through. Until then, swing out to iTunes if you're having a good time, drop a review for us, drop us a line at the table at roundtablepodcast.com. Leave a comment up on Nobilis's post on our website at roundtablepodcast.com. Brian, what's the suggestion du jour?
Ooh, go right.
Go right. Exactly. Until next time, guys, you take care. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
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 This episode is copyrighted 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast, and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. That means don't sell it, but you can share it all you like. And you can even use pieces of it in your own derivative work, as long as you attribute us as the source and release the work under the same licensing terms. Theme music composed and performed by the talented Hepcats of Brotown, Gary Gold, David LaBruyere, Billy Nobel, and Matt O'Donnell. If you'd like to be a guest writer or guest host, or learn more about the Roundtable Podcast, please visit our website at www.roundtablepodcast.com. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/roundtablepodcast. Our Twitter tag is @writerspodcast. Or just send us an email at thetable@roundtablepodcast.com. Thanks for listening.